Welcome to Directly Speaking, a direct-to-consumer marketer's podcast. Our podcast features marketing leaders in the direct-to-consumer and e-commerce space. We get to learn a bit about their brands and the stories behind them, compare notes on trends and challenges in the industry, learn how they approach their marketing journeys, and hopefully a little bit about them personally. I'm your host, Marcus Lancaster, head of direct-to-consumer and e-commerce strategy at Quad. And I'm excited about today's guest, Lee Price. Lee is a freelance creative earned media specialist with a track record of cut-through meaningful campaigns that drive massive awareness, talkability, and laughs. He was trained as a journalist, but Lee cut his brand marketing teeth at Irish sports betting firm Paddy Power, which is renowned for its mischievous tone. Lee rose there to become head of PR and mischief, and in 2022, he decided to test his approach in a completely different industry and location, moving to the Bay Area to lead storytelling and campaigns at Allbirds, where his approach prompted the firm to enlist Blink-182 drummer turned Kardashian lover Travis Barker to explain to audiences what an IPO is. He also launched the Lohanasense when he was there, and she became the unexpected face, or should we say foot, of Allbirds' first running shoe. He loves writing silly shit on LinkedIn, which is why I reached out to him. Eating British chocolate, writing in the third person, and I'm sorry to say, he's a Manchester United fan too. Lee, welcome to the show.
Thank you, and I'm sorry to say that too, or hear someone say that too, but we're coming back, just not anytime soon.
Well, we're just glad to have you, and you know, I enjoyed when we chatted before a lot, and so, you know, I just kind of want to bounce some ideas. You've done some amazing things. I love what you've built and the brand that you built around yourself. Why don't we start off by let's turn this thing on its head and talk about the inspiration that makes you get up every day and do the things you do so creatively.
Wow, straight in the deep end. I love it. The inspiration for getting up every day. I'm really driven career-wise by doing cool shit, and it's taken me a long time just to accept that that's it. Like, there's nothing more profound than that. I've loved when my work or something I've worked on has sort of intercepted with real life, and that someone I care about or whose opinion I really, really care about has said to me, have you seen this cool thing that so-and-so has done, or your business has done this really interesting thing? And I'm like, oh yeah, I kind of worked on that. And being British, it's a real contradiction that you spoke about my personal brand and like all these campaigns and the shiny things we do. I just want to have you walk around, Marcus, sort of reading my epitaph out like that, just saying the things for me so I don't have to, and I can get on with the silliness. I don't know if that's enough of a motivating factor, but I like making people smile. I like laughing. That's kind of it.
Well, isn't that kind of what makes us, when we're at our best as marketers, successful? When people smile and, you know, connect with you, there's a it's a backdoor way into their hearts.
Yeah. And I'm continually surprised by how powerful that simple insight is. And it seems so obvious, and I'm sure everyone knows that and thinks that and says it. But the best work that I've done has always been rooted in that very simple insight of it's human, which means it can be humorous, it can be surprising, it can be smart, whatever the sort of the tone you want to dial on. But it's always this sort of human, relatable connection that comes from it. And that doesn't feel profound or revelatory to say, but actually in our industry, it kind of is, at least in terms of the output.
Dovetails with something I talk about a lot, and that is authenticity. If your work is authentic to who you are, it's real.
Yeah, and that is so important. And that's maybe the bit where I don't do a great job of selling myself and my work, is that behind the creativity, the mischief, the stuff that comes naturally and the easy stuff is a lot of hard work around when it comes to the brand or the business. Like, who are we? Like, all these existential questions, like, how do we talk? What is it we say? And every brand, every business has their tone of voice book or their brand book, but very few are actually really crystal clear on what exactly they are. And when you know that, or you have a version of that, that just supercharges your opportunity in terms of storytelling. But as a basis, that's the most important thing, that strategy. And you can't identify white space unless there's a little bit of like a black frame around it. So our job is to explore white space, but we can't see it unless we've done our strategy and our framework first.
That's amazing. I love it. Okay, let's rewind now. How did you get started in this business, or maybe asked better, what possessed you to go from journalism to marketing and Paddy Power? And tell us about that story.
Yeah, it's always been for me, I would say in a slightly flippant way, a series of flukes or a series of gut feelings. I was a journalist. I studied sport journalism at college. So I wanted to be a journalist just because at school I was kind of okay or good at most things, but I was also just, all I cared about was girls and make people laugh. And the one thing that felt like a real world skill was I was quite good at writing, and a teacher once told me that. So I sort of clung onto it. So in my head, I love football, soccer. I'm kind of good at writing. I should be a sport journalist. That was about as much thought as I put into it. And I could get back to doing whatever I did that my mum would shudder at. And then I studied sport journalism, and I literally won a competition at the UK's biggest selling newspaper to have a column. It was like a search for a young writer, and I only did it because my mum sort of forced me, and she likes to remind me of that every single day since. But I ended this competition, and I realised I was going to win it pretty early because I got to this final six, and we all went into HQ to meet the editor and the journalists, and I realised it was me and five sob stories. So the paper wanted to run these five sob stories over the course of the week, and clearly once that story was done, they weren't journalists or writers. So the following week I had a sense that my column might run, and it was my job then to pester them into giving me a job. And long story short, they did. I didn't do journalism though. That's a really important distinction. I didn't do knocking on doors and all the scary, seedy, terrifying stuff, because I'd entered through this backdoor route, as you said earlier. I had permission to do things my own way from a really early stage. I'm really lucky that that's the case, but they're like, you know, you're the youngest person in the room by a worrying amount of years. Tell us what's going on in your world. And it just became this role where I would pitch ideas, that I'd basically go out and try things. I would social experiments. It was basically PR and brand work inside the newspaper.
I get it.
For brands without realizing. So I was just doing first person stuff. So would I call that journalism? I don't know. Would I call it a shitload of fun? Yes, and amazing fuel for anecdotes. So my version of journalism was different. And then one day I thought, oh, I've just had enough. Well, I'm getting to an age now where maybe getting an all over body wax and having that printed in the newspaper isn't ideal. I don't know. So just one day I just decided to leave, and I spoke to loads of random companies. I had no idea what I was doing. Really risky, actually. But I just met this guy from Paddy Power, and he said, you know, we're just obsessed with football and it's fun. And that was enough for me to sort of take the leap. And what I realized as I landed there was that this place was like the home of human first marketing in the UK and Ireland. And the more I spent time there, the more I reveled, and it really unlocked part of me that I didn't know I had. I got promoted within a year to head of PR, then to head of PR and Mischief, which is effectively PR and brand marketing. And then I was doing, you know, multi-channel campaigns around major sporting events whenever they happened. And it was just so much fun. And I think your question was, why did I get into this? I don't know why, but I'm grateful.
I love that. What a good story. Thanks. I want to talk to you about a few of these campaigns, but you just said something that I'd like to kind of get your definition of. You called it human first marketing. Mm. And you know, that probably has different definitions for many people. Do you mind telling us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I think that might be the first time I've ever said that phrase, classic on a podcast. But it's it's a thing that maybe I haven't got the right wrapper and name for, but I know what it is, and it's the thing that I love the most. It's marketing that speaks to humans, not businesses or customer profiles, like, or abstract things written on pieces of paper. It's things that make a ripple in the real world. And Paddy Power's version of that was humor and sport and provocation, but you can turn those dials whichever way you want. And the main part is, do you connect with a human consuming this content or consuming your brand? Do you reach them on an emotional level? You asked for a definition. I'm not sure that's going to make it into a dictionary, but no, it's waffly, but we can workshop it.
I like it. Well, and you know, that dovetails with what we were talking about before, you know, authenticity, because to truly connect with a consumer, however you define them, you as a brand have to be real to who you are and real to who they are and kind of connect those dots, you know?
Yeah. And too many brands are not scared of that, but they want to do that, but they interpret that as the inverse of what they should. And by that, I mean, they worry about not appealing to certain people and who they don't appeal to, who they don't connect with. And that's valid. But the first thought should be, who do we connect with? Who should we speak to? Rather than try and be ubiquitous, because if you're trying to speak to everyone, you actually speak to no one.
Got it. Yes. And that's so true. I love that. Okay. Our US listeners don't probably know Paddy Power as a brand. and it's probably good for you to define what they are and and define it, because then I want to talk a little bit about that amazing, you know, Save Our Shirt campaign.
Yeah, I would say Paddy Power is the best brand in the world of brand marketing in a human first way, because of the really precise way they speak to who they want to speak to. It's an Irish founded company, hence the name Paddy, literally by a guy called David Power, whose son was called Paddy, whose dad was called Paddy. And the business backstories that they were created to stave off English bookmakers coming into Ireland to exploit a lower tax rate or something really sexy like that. So they decided that in Ireland, they were going to protect the gambling industry in Ireland by creating a quintessentially Irish brand. And what that meant was, from the start, they knew exactly how their brand looked, like green logo, etc. Very everyone there, and how it sounded. And that was the Irish sense of crack or sense of humour. So this spirit of mischief and of looking at things a bit sideways was imbued in the business from day one or minus one, which is really powerful, of course. And then they knew what their punters loved, because they were their punter. So they were sports betting with a bit of sense of humour and a big dollop of mischief. And then once they'd, I guess, seen off the invading threat, they then expanded to the UK with that same formula of, you know, you've got all these other brands, and maybe some of those brands are a bit the negative stereotypes of an English person, like a bit stale or a bit posh. And they came into the UK as a super relatable brand and are now a household name with humongous recognition and a track record and history of doing really provocative brand marketing campaigns. And some of those campaigns have crossed the line. Some have been award-winning and for the social good. But in terms of a brand that's done interesting stuff, put it this way, on their 30th anniversary, we opened up a museum of all the marketing campaigns over those 30 years. And it was sold out every day in Dublin, because there's so much to consume. And even the ugly bits were shown, shall we say, which are perhaps most
that's popular good. Parts. All right, well, let's talk about a couple of those campaigns. Let's start with, why don't you tell us the story of Save Our Shirt?
Save Our Shirt is about football, which you might know as soccer incorrectly. And in the summer of whatever year it was, I think it might have been 2018, we'd identified that we were the only bookmaker in the UK and Ireland not to sponsor a football team shirt, have our logo on their shirt or the stadium or wherever. Which was an interesting point of view. We couldn't really afford to go and sponsor a big team to fight on that front. So my brief was, how do we address this sort of niggling itch, at least amongst the C-suite? Like, everyone else is doing this and we're not. Is that an issue, yes or no? And the more I dug into this, bearing in mind I'm a football fan and a published football author, so my insight was quite specific, but I flagged up that more than half of the teams in the UK were sponsored by a bookmaker. And this was not necessarily a good thing. The audience for football varies in age. There are a lot of kids, of course, and gambling isn't something they should necessarily consume. But also there's this particular trend of, it was Chinese companies in particular, sponsoring English football team shirts. And then everything they would print or put on the shirts or the perimeter boards would be in Chinese, because they weren't interested in the local audience or the UK audience. They were interested in the TV audience back in China. So if you're a fan of Team X of that logo, you're thinking, I have no idea what it says on this shirt. And it sort of is a little knife in the back of the football fan. So that was a waffly intro to it. But we just came across this insight of, well, what about if we swam a different direction, but also acknowledging that as our brand and we know ourselves and we know who we are, we have a bit of fun with it. So it took us a whole year to get this signed off, by the way. So the following summer, a football team, Huddersfield Town, announced that they'd signed a shirt sponsorship agreement with Paddy Power, Paddy Power's first ever in the sport. And that announcement immediately garnered mixed reaction, shall we say. Without anything else being done, people were saying, oh God, why have we done that? Then I think a couple of days later, Huddersfield posted their new home kit, which is a real landmark moment every season for every club. And it featured what I would describe as the world's ugliest logo. It had Paddy Power in giant letters in a sash from shoulder to hip going across the shirt. And it was the players wearing the kit. We'd done the photo shoot. And obviously the internet melted, all the things happened. But what we'd identified would happen, and I think this is the key to this campaign working, was that initial reaction, horror, what the hell was happening? Then comes the wave of the sort of Asian provocateurs online, you know, the smart asses who said, well, actually, it's Paddy Power. Obviously, it's a marketing stunt. And then that prompted a whole new discussion. The kicker was that very evening, Huddersfield Town played a friendly match, an exhibition game at their home stadium, wearing the kit that they'd announced that day on social media. So suddenly it took it from digital potential Photoshop style joke, right, into, oh my God, they are actually wearing the shirt. And this process, and then obviously we said nothing as the world burned again. And then a few days later, once we thought we'd had our fun, we came clean, and so did the shirt, as we announced it. We were unsponsoring Huddersfield and having no logo on the shirt. And the key to all of that is that we knew how people would perceive ourselves. We weren't so far up our backsides that we thought people would celebrate when we announced our sponsorship.
Yes.
We weren't so ignorant that we didn't think people might call our bluff on the initial announcement. And that kicker of them wearing it in the game was absolutely essential for it to work. And it was just the most beautiful sleep.
What a great idea. My life.
Well, yeah, and you know, obviously success have many fathers and all that stuff, but exactly what we said would happen happened. And that was very, very satisfying. And, you know, it shone a light on multiple issues. So as well as the gambling industry in general, which was a definite intended side effect, the Football Association fined Huddersfield for this kit, I think £50,000.
Really?
Which we put it out on the Paddy Power socials was more than they'd fined another team for racist chanting. So it gave us a real platform to, like, point at the inconsistencies around sport, society, et cetera, in a way that's pretty brave, I would say.
Love that. And how much earned media did you win from that?
Well, I mean, the official number is something absolutely ridiculous, like 7 quinzillion. I don't know, like just made up numbers, frankly. But I just remember that the day before, the morning that we were going to come clean, the Daily Mail had written, I think it was a 3-page column, like just saying, this is the end of football. This is the worst gambling industry sponsorship. This is the nadir. Exactly the piece we would hope they would write. And then we came clean, obviously, about 8 o'clock that morning after that had gone to print. And I just remember the journalist, bless him, at 8:01, he put on an out of office saying he was going on holiday because I think he just had to batten down the hatches because he'd fallen hook, line and sinker for it. And we had like a 7-minute segment on BBC Breakfast on the Saturday.
That's awesome.
The numbers are insane. But the best part for me, two things, and I'll stop waffling, I promise, is on the train in on the Friday. So this was after the game when we're still in our silent mode. I got really early training because I like to get a seat. It was like 5 a.m. There was 2 builders on the row in front of me. And I swear to God, I thought I was tripping or I was being punked because they were talking the whole journey about this campaign. And I was sat right behind them thinking, am I being filmed here? Like, is this some sort of candid camera nonsense? But they were raving about it, which felt really good.
Another one that I love that might be inspirational for many of our audience is the story about the World Cup and the LGBT stuff.
Yeah, and I think important to frame that this was a slightly simpler time when it comes to the word Russia.
Sure.
Although only slightly, to be honest with you. But the World Cup, FIFA World Cup was held in Russia in 2018. And when you're talking about a brand going into that space and then the build up to that competition, you know, there are so many directions we could have gone in because Russia as a conversation point is obviously very loaded. And, you know, there's talk about the travel, the weather, the social inequalities, et cetera. But we felt there was like a rainbow coloured elephant in the room in that they'd just passed this law I don't know this is what it was actually called, but it was dubbed like an anti-gay law in the UK media, where you basically couldn't be openly gay or lesbian, bisexual, etc. in Russian society. And when you're going into these tournaments, or when you're working brand marketing ahead of these tournaments, you're very paranoid about the worst case scenario is that you sort of have a similar campaign to one of your rivals. So you're looking for that white space. And it's hard around things like the World Cup where everyone's going to try and play.
Very difficult. Right?
We felt confident that no one else was going to be brave enough to take on Putin, which again, in this context, still was very different. But back then, we decided that we would make the Russian football soccer team inadvertent allies of the LGBT plus community in Russia. So we announced that every time Russia scored, they were the host nation, we donate £10,000 to LGBT plus causes in Russia. And we said, you know, make sure it's a minimum donation of 50,000 in case they don't score at all, in case they try and boycott us or because they're pretty bad. But actually, Russia had, I think, their best ever World Cup.
They did.
They won the opening game 5-0. Yeah. So we were immediately at our limit, or our minimum, sorry, I should say. And we went on to donate, I think it was like hundreds of thousands of pounds. I can't do the exchange to dollars.
Yeah.
And we made sure that through our alliance, through a LGBT plus media site in the UK, that the Russian football team won Allies of the Year for the gay community. I appeared on CNN Live, quite drunk, in a Russia football shirt, which now, again, seems like a bizarre throwback. And it was a campaign that showed that the Paddy Power DNA, which can be sort of dismissed as slightly laddie or whatever, you know, slightly flippant, you can be provocative, you can be mischievous, but have really meaningful insight and payoff behind it. And that campaign walked the walk. It donated so much money to people who needed it in Russia. It generated loads of talkability. And the sort of the feeling that people got from that, particularly skeptics of the brand, was, fuck, fair enough. And I think that was a very clear goal for us, that we've got other things that can speak to our core punters. But when it comes to the whole of society, that was something that would surprise on a human level.
I love that. That's such a good story. And again, more earned media. All right, let's pivot. You decided at some point, I guess 2022, that you were going to dump it at Paddy Power and come across the pond to San Francisco. What's the story there?
Yeah, God knows. This spooky guy, lovely guy, and I now know, but spooky guy slid into my LinkedIn DMs and was like, we should meet. I've got some trainers for you. And I thought, is he hitting on me? But finally, someone is. And it just so turned out that the place he'd suggested was literally next door to where I was going to be the next day anyway. So I thought, fine, I'll meet this guy. I'll get my free trainers because he's spoken straight to my heart there. Got my sneakers, had a nice chat with him. Didn't hear from him again for about a year. And then he messaged me on LinkedIn again, just saying, I'm in China, we should talk. And like by this point, I was like, this guy is kind of like Batman, but I kind of love it. And by this point, it was, I think the UK was in lockdown. COVID was in full flow. I was loving my time at Paddy Power, but I did have this nagging doubt in the back of my mind of, am I doing a good job here? Or is it just pre-set up for anyone to do a good job here? Like I had this sort of insecurity about, like, so I hadn't had the training on the background in marketing and brand. I was making up as I went along. So I had that insecurity. And long story short, he wanted me to come and work for Allbirds in San Francisco. He introduced me to the co-founder, Tim, who used to play soccer for New Zealand. I met Tim and fell in love, and that was that. But I think the timing was just right in terms of I was having these doubts. We were being locked down. So the idea of moving to California suddenly felt like just the escape that we were looking for as a family. And it gave me an opportunity to try and test this formula, I guess I'd evolved in my time at Paddy Power, and see if it worked outside of that safety blanket, like outside of a brand that is known for that stuff. Like, can I go to a California startup who makes sustainable sneakers, and can I do something similar, or can I apply this formula to them? And I guess we'll find out.
Well, you did, and Allbirds, I think probably in no small way due to your influence has carved themselves a very unique niche in the footwear space. Obviously the brand is in and of itself unique, a marriage of equals, as it were. But let's talk about a couple campaigns that I thought were cool. that you were sharing with me. First, let's talk about the IPO and Travis Barker's role in it.
Yeah, and this is that authenticity piece you were talking about. Luckily enough, like, I've been able to overcome the sort of anxieties that mean I don't have to pretend to be something I'm not. And I'm really grateful for that, because very almost immediately getting into the door at Allbirds, I reported to the two co-CEOs, and it was like all they spoke about was the IPO. And eventually, I think after maybe 3 or 4 meetings, I just had to finally bite the bullet and say, look, I'm really sorry. I don't know what an IPO is. And you keep saying it's going to be this amazing consumer moment. I'm just worried that in the real world out there, it may not be as exciting as you find it. And they said that really well, frankly. I didn't get sacked on the spot, which was my fear. And they said, well, that's great. That's even more reason for you to own this moment of making the IPO a consumer-facing moment. So I took that away, and Allbirds hadn't done much brand marketing, I think it would be fair to say, in terms of the style that I was used to, at least. And that's partly why I was brought in, right, to sort of build this muscle of campaigns and storytelling. They'd done amazing stuff, but this was kind of new to them. And so I was trying to find an unlock for the IPO moment. And I think out of desperation, I'd watched The Big Short, because that's a movie about a complex financial institution and how it works, etc. And the scene which everyone knows from that is, I'm pretty sure it's this movie, it might be embarrassing if it's not, but is the bathtub explanation of what exactly The Big Short is about. The very complex financial thing that caused the collapse of the housing market, and which these people in the film were betting on, which is an iconic scene because it's genius and it's brilliant. But also, when I shared that scene with them as inspiration, they understood it. So talking about connect on a human level, you can have all these abstract campaign ideas, but if they know it's worked before in a way, that makes them more comfortable. And then simultaneously, I'd gone speaking to my agent pals, talent agent pals, saying, who have you got for really cheap? And I had this list of celebrities that would, you know, cut a string anywhere for like a couple of dollars. And on one of those lists for what I think was a reasonable price was Travis Barker from Blink-182. But Travis Barker, even just imagine him in a bathtub visually with all his tattoos of his skinhead, that's a striking image that makes you want to double click. And that really is all we're trying to achieve on the social media feed. How do we stop you scrolling? How do we make your thumb pause and press our content? So if our content, the thumbnail, is Travis Barker in a bathtub, that's a good starting point.
Then
when you click it, you have this very softly spoken, I would say in a loving way, quite earnest gentleman talking about a very complex financial process. That's kind of funny and discombobulating at the same time and makes you go, what the fuck am I doing here? And then the kicker, really, as well as the price, was that he just started to be linked with Kourtney Kardashian, who we know he's now married and he's part of that clan. But at the time, that was very bubbling under the surface. So the pitch to the bosses was interesting character regardless, doing this. We know the format. People will recognize the format and will appreciate the parody. There's a chance he blows up in the next 2 months by the time we go do this IPO, in which case we've paid an absolute bargain and his profile is higher than ever. And they liked that sort of informed gamble, I would say. And they liked the familiarity of the parody process. And then the script we could have some fun with. So long story short, no spoiler alert to anyone listening, but he married Kourtney. Love, happy ending. And he blew up. So this price will have an extra zero or two had we approached him post that relationship.
For sure.
And it worked. And the best part about that was it sort of loosens the wariness or skepticism of people within the business to what storytelling and campaigns could look like. And in fact, made them sort of hungry and curious for what was next.
Got it. Love it. All right. Give me the short version of the Lohanasense too.
Yes.
Then I've got a couple more questions for you I want to get to.
Cool. Short version is similar situation. We had a running shoe coming out, Allbirds' first proper running shoe. But in the same sentence, the design team were saying, but it's not just for proper runners. Well, that's how I heard it anyway. So similar format. Unexpected person to be the front of this shoe. Larry David was at £1 gazillion. He just done a crypto ad, so it couldn't be his running club. And then on one of those lists of talent from the agents, I spotted Lindsay Lohan. I was like, oh, she was huge. What's she doing now? And then you start writing like an illustrative script. and the sort of the Mean Girls, the Parent Trap, the Freaky Friday references come pouring out. And it was just, it was gold dust. Again, she hadn't, her comeback hadn't started kicking off just yet. We created a piece of content that showcased our new shoe that was so shareable, it was untrue. Like, there was, I think, 10 to 12 references to her iconic films in the background, in the script, etc. And people on social love to show that they know their stuff. So if they can spot one of these things or be told what those things are, they like sort of flex and say, oh, I love that Mean Girls quote, like we wear pink on Fridays. And similar format, a bigger scale, a bigger production. I flew to Dubai for 36 hours, no hotel room to keep budget down, to oversee the shoot. Lindsay was incredible. And the piece of content was just, yeah, again, we had to measure that one. We knew it worked.
This is really cool. All right. A couple questions I want to throw at you. One is, those brands, Allbirds has had obviously a very unique, you know, fundamental premise to who they were. And Paddy Power, you very, you know, you explained the story of who they are very effectively. Can everybody be that provocative in the way they tell their brand storytelling, or maybe asked a different way? If you were working with a more conservative brand, how do you like bring that mischievous nature into the into brand storytelling?
Yeah, can anybody be as provocative? They don't have to be. It doesn't have to be provocation, right? But to take your question maybe less literally, can anybody do something like that? I think yes. I think you have to know who you are and how you want to talk. That part is important. And that's the actual blocker, really, is not enough brands have a strong enough conviction in who they are as a brand and what they stand for. But you can dial down the provocation of Paddy Power and dial up the humor or the surprise, the shock, etc., other human emotions are available, of Travis Barker or Lindsay Lohan. There was nothing provocative about Lindsay Lohan clip. It was just like nostalgia was the thing there we wanted to be, the relatability. Yes. As long as you can be brave enough to not just speak at the world about your thing, if you can speak to the world about what's interesting to them and your thing happens to be in the mix, that's the key. And I think so many brands have achieved rapid growth through performance marketing and following that formula. And I completely get it. It works up to a certain point. That moving away from a very one-to-one model is challenging. And when you do spend dollars, you want to say all your things, all your business things, all the product features. But you can't just make a brochure in video form. You have to engage the people first with humanity. So could anyone do it? Yes. Can everyone do it? Will everyone do it? No, because it takes that sort of bravery, I would say.
I love that. That's a great answer. Thank you. So thanks. The follow-up question, which you've teed up perfectly, is any brands that are out there doing that you really admire these days that come to mind?
There are obvious examples, but they're obvious because they're good. Like you think of Liquid Death and their stuff. And do you have to like all of their things? No. Does it matter if you hate some of their things? No. Do you remember their stuff? Yes. They always lean into sort of slightly surreal humor or just shock factor in terms of you don't see what's coming next, or even just the surprise of, oh, they did that, but they did that joke or they made that real. I think they're a really good brand at it. Next one I'm going to say is KFC. Now, KFC in the UK has got a very different perception to KFC in the US. So
it does.
I hope this isn't too divisive, but the chicken in the US, by the way, is humongous and I love it. But they ran out of chicken in the UK in, I don't know, 20 something. And their response the next day in their print ad was to reverse their logo to be FCK and then like print an apology beneath that. And just the bravery of owning it and just knowing that, you know what, people are pissed off because they want chicken. There's nothing you can say to make it better other than we're getting the chicken as soon as we can. And that's the sort of, to me, that's the greatest.
I love that. I was not aware of that story.
Yeah, it's just iconic. And it's so simple that I can imagine some brands that I've worked with would be tempted to overcomplicate that one. It didn't need it.
Well, you are so creative, and I love talking to you. I could go on and on. Tell me about where you get the inspiration for this creativity. What's the engine that drives it?
Maybe my low attention span. That's not too different an answer. I just think we work so much and it takes up so much of our life that at least make it enjoyable and fun, right? And I'm not a doctor or a politician, so I'm never going to have that sort of level of meaningfulness in my life. So I just want to be laughing as much as I can. And there's something really galvanizing about working on these types of campaigns where you're doing something. Like, you're not just following a formula or ticking a box. You're putting yourself out there, and it's terrifying, but the sort of the adrenaline rush is, it's hard to beat. But I have got an addictive personality as well. So that plus attention span equals chaos.
Got it. So what's next for you then?
I don't know. So just move back to the UK is the first answer. And so lucky me, like, I've got a few freelance bits that mean I can just take a minute to work out the answer to that question. I've always sort of just followed my gut. So we came back to the UK on a sort of, I think time's up sort of conversation at home with my wife. I'm figuring it out. I think I've always been figuring it out. Aren't we all, as we sort of stumble through life? So I don't know. I'm freelancing and consulting, and I only want to work with really good brands, which makes me quite fussy. And by good brands, I don't mean the big established brands. I mean brands that want to be something, that want to go somewhere. I think my work's best suited to growing or emerging brands that have a genuine desire to do interesting work, because everyone says they have that desire. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know, Marcus, what's next. I think, and I kind of love that. I love that I'm sort of making it up as I go along, and I've blagged my way through a career this far, just making it up day to day.
I love it. All right. Well, one last question for you is, actually two quick ones. First, how did you become a United fan, and is there any cure for that illness?
My dad was a professional boxer, didn't like football. We had a childminder, like a nanny, I guess, in the US, who was a massive Man United fan. And for whatever reason, she would just show me old VHS tapes of old games in exchange for me eating a sandwich or something. So I think my fandom was bought by food, which tracks, honestly.
Well, that tracks perfectly. okay. If you could go back 10, 15 years ago and teach yourself a lesson that you know today that you didn't know back then, what would it be?
Just to not ignore that little voice inside. I think I've eventually always followed it, but sometimes I've paused or tried to deny it. And I think, I know trust your gut isn't particularly original advice, but if you don't, you'll always wonder what if. And if you do, you won't ask yourself any questions. It's what took me away from the supposedly dream job in journalism. It what took me away from the next dream job in Paddy Power. It took us as a family to the United States, and it's brought us back now to our hometown and no work that's steady and no obvious plan, because that's the only way of happiness, I think, is listening to your little voice inside.
If somebody wants to connect with you, what's the best way to reach out?
You can send me an email. That's nice. It's just my name, Lee Price, and the number 64@gmail.com, or I'm on LinkedIn. I think my URL's got like pro attention seeker in it, but if you put my name in, I'm sure you'll find it. I'm connected with Marcus, so that's a good starting point.
Fantastic. Well, Lee, thank you so much for the time today. It's been so great having you on here, and I'm looking forward to staying connected.
Me too. Thank you, Marcus. I appreciate it.
And thank you for joining us on Directly Speaking today, everybody. We hope you enjoyed the content and enjoyed the opportunity to get to know Lee a little bit better with us. Hope to have you join us again soon. Take care, everybody.